verse 20 reads, "Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone, and cast it into the sea, saying, Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all. The voice of harpers and musicians, and of pipers and trumpeters, shall be heard no more at all in thee. And no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy mansions were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth."
To give a short review of what we had before us this morning, there was in the beginning, if I remember rightly, a little question about the character of the judgments on Babylon. There was, as naturally, this one side that the ten kings unite to destroy the harlot, showing us the destruction of the religious character of Babylon. And we have on the other side, in chapter 18, the divine stroke on the commercial side, the city. And the question was now, the starting question was, who are the rejoicing kings? Are they only those who are outside the Roman Empire, or could they be in the empire? And the answer to this question depends largely on the character we give to these two judgments. And if we see that there are two judgments, then it would be could seem logical that not only the kings outside the Roman Empire, but even the leaders of the Roman Empire, the ten kings, would be sad and bewail the loss they have by that judgment of God, which they had not foreseen when they stripped the harlot of her glory in the judgment they had executed before. So, seeing that the older our predecessors have not reached an agreement on the exact character of this judgment, I would not venture to put the final stroke here. And then we spoke very largely about the character of that commercial system, which is of such character and has such a power which we can hardly imagine, although we see our present economies in Europe and worldwide. Already the predecessors or the first traces of what will come out then in full blossom. In the end of our morning session, we saw then that the judgment, which is mentioned in verse 20 and also verse 24, that this shows us the links which exist, and this leads us back to the beginning of that first meeting, the links between the two judgments, because even here, where we find in chapter 18, we find the commercial side, so to speak, it is still made mention of the religious side of that harlot who was a persecutor of saints, who was the one guilty of the blood of many, many true believers, which is being made mention of in verse 20 and 24. I hope. that this was at least the beginning for a short review of the session.
Is it not exceedingly likely that the destruction of the religious system would immediately produce a catastrophic commercial collapse in the world?
I had the same thought this morning, or a very similar thought. Would it be possible that the destruction of the religious character of this harlot could be provoked or could be done by these ten kings without their giving themselves account of the commercial consequences of this stroke? This is a question which I had in this morning meeting, and it's very similar to what you say. It is hardly imaginable that these things, which are naturally to be distinguished, can be separated in such a way. It is a question from my side also.
And the fact, moreover, that they are linked seems to be emphasized by the fact that those who are mourning keep at some distance. It's repeated several times, if not, that they stood afar off. So it's impossible, I think, to just see the hand of man in this. I think there must be an awareness of the hand of God in it, because it says so distinctly, they stood afar off, lest they should suffer in the same way.
I'm not exactly clear, really, how the collapse of the religious system of this world will have a catastrophic effect on the commercial aspects of this world, because at the moment they seem to be going on almost in an irreligious way, the commercial situation. So, you know, it's not immediately obvious to me how the collapse of the religious system will affect the commercial system of the world.
But is it not a fact, Alan, that the religious system, Babylon, is one of the richest corporations in the whole world? Even now?
I don't want to go into the economics of it too much. Most of the Vatican's wealth is in the paint.
No. I must contradict. I have read many times, and other lawyers will confirm that the Vatican is the biggest commercial power in Italy. The absolute, it's the number one commercial power in Italy. How many, I don't know how many companies, banks, etc. belong. There was a big bank crash some years ago, but we are with some archbishop involved, that's right. But they possess many companies in Italy. They are the number one commercial power in Italy, and that means that they are not number 100 in Europe. They are also in the top group. So this shows this, even now, this enormous commercial power of this, the system which we here have full-blown Babylon, which starts in the Vatican, Rome.
Perhaps you'll permit me a little book notice. We're looking at the sure word of prophecy here, but there is an investigative journalist, an Australian, who wrote a book, In God's Name, which gives good documentation about what you're saying, to show the tremendous wealth of Rome, not only in Italy itself, but in places like Chicago and so forth, where Rome is in the ascendant and they have tremendous financial interest worldwide. And the previous Pope sought to, he was only Pope for a few days, 30 days or so, he sought to clean up the terrible state the Roman system is still in, but his life was prematurely terminated, it seems, according to this journalist. And they couldn't tidy things up without affecting tremendous commercial interests. And a great power there. So it's well documented, and it's one of the few, I think the only secular book that we stopped in the bookshop.
That is a pamphlet by R. K. Campbell on Babylon, isn't it? Which again confirms what you're saying.
I'm not pretending to give any final answer to a question that has puzzled many worldwide minds, but perhaps I can just make a suggestion, because I don't think the two schools are so contradictory, the one judgment school and the two judgment schools. I think chronologically we have two, and morally we have one. And that's not so uncommon. If you think of Satan, for example, there are different stages, also chronologically, in his judgment. But you can still call it the judgment of faith. Now with Babylon, I thought we had fixed the time when the religious system falls chronologically to take place in the middle of the week. And after that, the beast will not tolerate the arrival of the religious system. On the other hand, we had fixed the judgment of Babylon that comes from God as taking place under the second soul. That would be immediately before the Lord's coming, 1619. So, for that reason, I would think that chronologically, these are two, and we can distinguish the fall of the religious aspect from the fall of the commercial aspect. Morally, I think they are one, because as was pointed out, the city has so many people of the woman, for example, in verse 16, you find the city clothed with these garments, which is really a description that fits the wounds. And also we pointed out in the last verse, the city is held responsible for what the woman or the harlot has done. And so at least that was a way of thinking about it that satisfies my mind, that chronologically you have two judgments, but morally it's one system, the woman is the city, both is called Babylon, and it's one judgment.
Ich möchte auf diesen interessanten Vers 20 zu sprechen kommen.
I would like to mention this interesting verse 20.
Wir wissen, dass die Gläubigen im Alten Testament nach Rache gerufen haben.
We know that the saints in the Old Testament called for revenge.
Und wir wissen, dass die Heiligen, die nach der Entrückung auf Erden sein werden, das auch wieder tun werden.
And we know that the saints who will be on earth after the rapture will be the same.
Wir wissen ebenso klar, dass uns in der Zeit der Gnade nicht bezieht.
We know quite clearly that this is not appropriate for us in the time of grace.
Die Jünger, wir haben ein Bild davon, als die Jünger Feuer vom Himmel herabfallen lassen wollten.
We have a picture of this when the disciples wanted to call fire to come down from heaven.
Und da Jesus sagt, ihr wisst nicht, welches Geist des Kindes sein.
And the Lord Jesus says to them, you know not which spirit children you are.
Es geziemt uns nicht in der Zeit der Gnade nach Rache zu rufen.
It is not appropriate for us to call for revenge in the time of grace.
Sondern für die Menschen in dieser Welt zu beten und ihnen das Evangelium zu bringen.
But to pray for the people in this world and to bring them the gospel.
Und wir haben ein sehr schönes Bild in Abraham in Verbindung mit Sodom.
And we have a very nice picture in connection with Abraham and Sodom.
Das ist unser Charakter.
This is our character.
Er hat gebetet dafür.
He prayed for Sodom.
Aber dann finden wir in Kapitel 19, als das Gericht vollzogen war,
but then we find in Genesis 19, when the judgment had been carried out,
wie in Vers 27 früh am Morgen am Ort ist, wo vor Jehova gestanden hat,
how he is in the place where he was before Jehova early in the morning,
und er sieht den Rauch von Sodom, wie der Rauch eines Schmelzofens.
And he sees in verse 28 the smoke of Sodom going up as the smoke of a furnace.
Ich meine, das ist ein sehr klares Bild auf Vers 20.
And I think that's a very clear picture also for verse 20.
Wenn es auch nicht unsere Aufgabe ist, nach Rache zu bitten, although it is not our task to call for revenge,
und sowieso nicht uns selbst zu rächen,
and even less to take revenge for ourselves,
sondern Gott sagt uns, mein ist die Rache,
but God says, mine is the revenge,
dann bleibt es doch bestehen, dass Gott gerecht ist.
Then it is still true that God is righteous.
Und auch alle Schandtaten, die an Heiligen getan worden sind in der Zeit der Gnade, richten wir.
And also all the mischief that has been wrought concerning the saints during the period of grace will be judged.
Und das ist, was wir jetzt in unserem Abschnitt vor uns haben.
And this is what we have before us in our passage.
Gott bleibt gerecht.
God remains righteous.
Und wird nichts ungerichtet lassen, was an seinen Heiligen in der Gnadenzeit getan wird.
And he will not leave unjudged those things which are done to his saints during the period of grace.
Do you take the saints in verse 20 to include the saints of the day of grace?
That's a question to Matt.
We could say that it gets clear because after saints we find apostles. It refers clearly to the apostles in the New Testament. And we think again of what we had in the first lecture in the evening, mentioned Acts 12, when James was murdered, killed by Herod. So I think it is clear that New Testament saints are definitely included in what we have here in verse 20. The question remains for what we have at the end, the prophets. Do we think here of New Testament prophets only, or do we see it in a more general way? That is a question remaining for me here. Concerning the general structure, I think it's quite remarkable. We have on one hand in verse 8 God's judgment already. Then from verse 9 to 19, three groups which are mourning, lamenting. And then the great contrast in verse 20, rejoice over her heaven. And then in verse 21, we come back to the judgment. If I understand it correctly, another question from my side. It's the same as we have in verse 8, right? What we have in the last section of this chapter, from verse 21 to verse 24.
One more thought.
Sorry. Briefly on what we have in verse 20. For God has judged your judgment upon her. This your judgment. You could think maybe of what we had studied in detail yesterday in verse 4. Saints leaping, coming out of this system. In doing so, in some sense, it is a judgment. They judge it as something which is not from God, and they refuse it by coming out of it. I think we could have also this thought if you think of this expression. God has judged your judgment. The saints saw that it is not from God, they spoke against it, they took a clear stand against the system, and then we see at the end that God shows that they were right in taking the stand against it.
If not faith in verse 20, the word heaven, the word saints certainly would include saints of the present dispensation, but let's remember we have already been taken to heaven. So that the saints here seems to be a general word that would certainly include us. The apostles are certainly the apostles of the present dispensation, and the prophets would be the Old Testament prophets. But they're all in heaven. And there's no doubt that when this company is in heaven, they'll have the right judgment. They will share the judgment that has led to the severe dealing with Babylon. Now, if we can keep that clearly before us, that their judgment is a right judgment, when we come to the moral application of the verse, we'll come to an assessment of Babylon in the light of the fact
what God is going to do with Babylon. So that there is definitely a word of moral instruction here for us who are still in the body. But properly, you can see that their judgment that they will execute, that they'll have in that day, will be after we take it.
Gründe, froh zu sein über dieses Gericht.
There are two reasons for us why we can rejoice about this judgment.
Das eine ist eben klar vorgestellt worden.
One has been presented to us quite clearly.
Wir haben im Deutschen die Fußnote Rechtssache. Eure Rechtssache ist ausgeführt worden.
In the German version there was a footnote which said, instead of revenge, it says your cause has been taken into account.
Unterstützt das, was du gesagt hast.
And this supports what you said.
Es ist eine gewisse Rechtfertigung des Handelns dieser Heiligen, die dann dafür getötet worden sind.
In a way, this judgment justifies the actions of those saints who have been killed.
Aber es gibt noch etwas Zweites.
But there is another reason.
Und jetzt mache ich einen Sprung vorwärts.
Now I will leap ahead.
Und zwar sagen sie, sprechen wir nicht nur seid fröhlich.
Because we do not only do we rejoice,
sondern wir finden dann auch das vierfache Halleluja.
But also we find the fourfold Halleluja.
Und das führt uns schon hin in Richtung Hochzeit des Lammes.
And these already direct us towards the marriage supper of the Lamb.
Und das ist der zweite Grund, warum wir froh sind über das Gericht.
And this is the second reason why we rejoice about the judgment.
Denn bevor die falsche Braut nicht gerichtet ist,
because it is only unless the false bride has been judged,
bevor nicht völlig klar ist, wer das Weib des Lammes ist,
until it has been made perfectly clear who is the wife of the Lamb,
kann die Hochzeit des Lammes nicht geschehen.
There is no way for the marriage supper of the Lamb to occur.
Das ist ein zweiter Gedanke.
This is the second thought.
Ich weiß, dass in Vers 20 noch nicht da ist.
I know that it's not strictly speaking contained in verse 20.
Aber in unserem Herzen strecken wir uns schon ein bisschen aus.
But in our hearts we already move ahead to that thought.
Nach der Hochzeit des Lammes.
Of the marriage supper of the Lamb.
Und sie kann erst geschehen, wenn klar ist, wer die Braut ist.
And this supper can only take place when it has become clear who is the bride.
Das verstehen wir im Indischen schon sehr gut.
I think we would understand this very well in the earthly sense.
Kein Mann kann heiraten, bevor nicht öffentlich klar ist, wer seine Frau ist.
No man can marry until it's quite clear publicly who is going to be his wife.
Und diese wichtige Gedanke wollen wir im Kopf behalten, wenn wir jetzt weiterfahren.
And this important thought we want to keep in mind as we move on in the text.
This verse 20 is not isolated. It is connected with this general theme of rejoicing. Some believers find a difficulty with the fact that heaven should be rejoicing about judgment. People here may not encounter that, but when I speak to believers, they think that there should be no rejoicing in judgment. He pointed out this is only part of the whole end in view, and God will be glorified in judgment. God has been glorified in his creation. He has been supremely glorified at Calvary's cross, John 17. Glorify thou me with thine own self, with the glory which I had with thee before the world was. God has been supremely just glorified at Calvary's cross. So therefore, this is consistent with the justice and holiness of God, rather to be rejoicing at his judgment. As if we contemplate and really understand the depth, awfulness of sin, then we can see how heaven can do nothing else but rejoice when judgment has come in, and in anticipation. the bride who are going to be revealed from God.
Because the expression here in verse 20 is not revenge, but it's really judgment, and there is a difference there. God has judged your judgment upon her. And I think the thought here is really that of going out. Verse 4 has been referred to, and I'd like to make the practical implication for us by referring to Ephesians 5. Going out, standing apart, of really means judging something. And Abram has been referred to, and he was a separated man. He wasn't in the gates of Sodom, he stood apart. That was judgment. He didn't interfere in God's judgment, but he stood apart. And in Ephesians 5, it says, I think it's verse 10 probably. Yes. He should stand apart from the works, verse 11, and do not have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather also reprove them. You see, not having fellowship, standing apart, is really the same as reproving. And that's the problem with separation. And this is exactly the reason why people resent this. If you separate from a system, if you separate from a group of Christians, you really judge them. And they do not like this, they resent it. But this is the way of judgment for saints. And this is the way we have to practice this in our days. It's God's judgment, really. God sees things this way, and we see things the same way as he does.
Not join trade unions, you see, and this is the way they're attacked, you see, because the brother or sister in many cases stands apart and will not join the trade union. Do you have trade unions in Switzerland? And these dear brethren stand apart, the trade union colleagues know right away that is a condemnation of their system, and they therefore get
in regard to the order of apostles and prophets, and in Ephesians 2:20 it speaks about the church being built on the foundation of apostles and prophets, which leads me to think that both are Christian rather than Jewish prophets and New Testament. New Testament apostles. Otherwise, it would have been in the reverse order. I don't know if that's correct. It would appear to be so. And that would mean that the general disposition of Christians to be against this confused system is what's being vindicated.
Include both Old Testament saints as well as present Testament saints. The word saints in general, and then you get the distinction between the apostles, that's not the New Testament apostles, but the prophets are definitely Old Testament. That's where I read.
My additional question then would be, how is it that a system which is clearly confined to the Christian and immediately post-Christian era could be guilty of the blood of those who have been living in previous eras? That is my question, and that is why I would confine the saints, the apostles, and the prophets to the time after Pentecost.
I took the issue of the first. I thought, you know, I got the answer.
Goes right back almost to the flood of Abel, whenever righteous people are being persecuted. And this thing which receives its full culmination in Babylon, this trend against the righteous people has been right there from the beginning. And some commentators, I'm not absolutely sure, but I think Mr. Carey is one of them, and I may be getting my source wrong, but he seems to indicate this, you see, that it's a thought going right back to there. So strictly speaking, you know, you are right that the blood that's been shed has been shed since the Christian era. But the concept of it, you know, the idea of the righteous always being persecuted, the blood of Abel, you know, through Zacharias, and things like that. This seems to be, you know, what Mr. Carey and others are suggesting. But of course, it's not scripture, really, but that's their problem. I leave it to you, Mr. Tracy.
And in her was found the blood of prophets and saints, and of all the slain upon the earth. On the one hand, you are right that here is maybe a general application, but it is an application. But naturally, the application would mean that the same principle of earthly power exerted means death of the faithful. That has been in Abel, that has been in Sodom, etc. Not in Sodom, but in the Old Testament times, but beginning from Abel until Zechariah. But the question is not the application, the general idea, but what is meant here. Then, I mean, I could understand. I'm not quite aware of that. What Kelly wrote, I have not maybe not read so much as you have. But I think that we should stick to what there is the judgment of Babylon, and she is confined to a certain period of time, which is longer than the Christian era. That's quite clear, but which does not go back before. It's only a conference, confer means to put together.
Mm-hmm. And it is very attractive to read this with the whale in the previous section. And we've got, it's exactly the same cause that produces the two things, really. One brings sorrow to the earth, the other joy to heaven. And I suppose in this we're to measure the immense distance between the two things.
Matthew, in his Wolves and the Scribes and Pharisees, goes on to say, so that all righteous blood shed upon the earth should come upon you, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zacharias, the son of Macharias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation, this unbelieving generation, and it's God's governmental dealings with the Jews there. And after all, in the future, it's going to be also the time of Jacob's trouble. So we've got these two thoughts really in tangent.
Go to Jeremiah 51. There we have also the prophecy against Babylon. If you will read some of these verses, you find a lot of parallel to exactly our portion here. Jeremiah 51, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against Babylon, against them that dwell in the midst of them, rise up against me a destroying wind. He then further on, he says, verse 6, compared to our verse 4, flee out of the midst of Babylon, and deliver every man his soul, be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, he will render unto her a recompense. Babylon has been a golden cup in the Lord's hand, that made all the earth drunken, the nation have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. So we have again there the two words, the fall and the destroying, and so on. And so we see that even there we have this parallel, which would also then refer to the prophets of the Old Testament.
It's also very significant that there's a sterility in that case, whereas here in our chapter, mighty stone is sunk in the sea. I think that both represent the sea, don't they? The complete destruction of these systems. In Jeremiah, it was imperial Babylon, and that we read, do we not at the end? Yes, and that 64. Thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink, and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her. There's a destruction which is complete and inevitable, and in this our chapter we have the same thought, that Babylon will not rise again.
We have here a few times no. We just heard that this millstone thrown into the sea speaks of a complete destruction, but it is the destruction of a system and not of people. Just to mention that all the people that were in it, these unbelievers, are still alive and they have to appear before the great white throne. So this repetition of no more at all goes to the system and not to people. I think we know that, but how many have taken such words and have given a wrong application and a wrong solution. So we want to keep that it is a system which is destructed, but people are responsible. They still live and they have to appear for judgment.
Assault to verse 20, then the heaven and the earth and all that is therein shall sing for Babylon. And we have also two similar thoughts to what we have in Revelation 18 later on, namely in verse 58, we have judgment by fire over Babylon, and then what our brother read earlier, verse 63, 64, it is compared to throwing into water. The same what we had in Revelation 18, verse 8, on one hand, judgment by fire, and what we have here at the end, compared to throwing into the sea.
With regard to verse 21, is Babylon one specific city, or is Babylon London, Brussels, Amsterdam, Rome, Paris, New York, Ottawa, and so on. And all these places where the principles of Babylon are coming to a head, are they all, you know, encapsulated in Babylon? And you'll receive the same fate, the systems around these cities. Hamburg, I forgot to mention Hamburg. And then other German city there, isn't it? Hamburg and Des Moines as typical. I left Switzerland out because I don't know too much about that country. It is a serious question, dear brother, because many commentators on this, you know, see in Babylon not a specific city, but see the Babylonic tendency in all of our modern cities and in our villages too. The television has brought Babylon into the homes of every house in the market.
Literal Babylon that was being spoken of, but I think it's important to distinguish that in the book of Revelation these words are used in a different connection, even though the language is very similar. We mustn't forget that the Revelation is a book of symbols. The Lord said, signify these things. And I would illustrate this point by referring to chapter 20, where we have Gog and Magog referred to, which are also the first or primary mention is in Ezekiel 37 and 38. And in Ezekiel, those places have a geographical location. The Prince of Rosh and Meshach, they come out of the north parts, and the word is really Russia. But when we come to the book of Revelation, Gog and Magog, in the final rebellion, Satan goes out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog. So although the same term are used, it's a description of something else. And I think that's helpful to see also in our considerations with Babylon. Although the language is very similar, it's something else that is in view.
Didn't we say on a previous occasion that Babylon, the great, the arts and so on, was really the parent of all the worldly systems where idolatry, whether abstract or concrete, drew the soul away from Christ? And so it's not centered in one thing or one place geographically, but it's a system where religious and worldly confusion, worldly things are confused together.
It would seem, would it not, that in those judgments he puts his hand upon the chief agents. You're going to find this in connection with the beast and the Antichrist. He deals with them himself. And it may just be that here we have the great city singled out. And my love is with Rome. But if others think otherwise, I think it's in keeping with God's general principle that he deals with the chief in his judgment. This is, I think it was quite customary with the Romans, if they had prisoners they want to get rid of, they would tie something around their necks and throw them into the sea. It was quite a convenient way for Romans to get rid of their prisoners. The only difficulty was that if they threw them into the Dead Sea, it didn't work. But they won't get it out about this one. It'll be completely out of sight. If you go down the list, we find, in other terms, that which appeals to the eye, to the ear, whatever you may be looking for, is dealt with thoroughly in this picture.
It is a very blessing for us as believers to refresh our mind on verse 19, the end of the verse. Thou wilt cast all their sin into the depths of the sea. And as believers, we can rejoice in there. The question of sin, I go in the sea, the man in the glory has settled for me. And the quote is on to say, my sins are all hid in the depths of the sea. They were carried down there by the man on the tree. From the poem, the man and the boy. Wonderful to think of that.
where it says, God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Now, here, of course, it's a complete different thought, because God cannot really explain to us what it's going to be like. And so that uses these negative terms to say all these things will not be there in heaven anymore. But here we have all the things in which man delights, that will be all finished, and it is not to set it aside with something better. It's going to be the end of it. No more at all.
Beaten hut.
We find in verses 22 and 23 that Babylon did have quite something on offer for people.
Und es sind deutlich fünf Dinge, die hier vor uns sind.
And there are clearly five things that are before us here.
Und sie werden dadurch unterschieden, dass gesagt wird, es wird nie mehr gehört werden.
And they are distinguished by the phrase, either it will no more be heard,
oder in dir gefunden werden,
or found in thee.
Und das erste ist die Musik.
And the first thing is music.
Harfensänger, Musiker, Flöter und Trompeter.
Verse 22, harfensängers, musicians, flute players and trumpeters.
Das ist etwas Großartiges, was gerade dieses System den Menschen geboten hat auf dem Gebiet der Musik.
There were great things on offer within the system in terms of music.
Ebenso großartig ist das zweite, die Künstler.
And the second part is at least as great, the artificers.
Das ist die Malerei und die Steinhauerei.
There are painters and sculptors.
Und dann das Geräusch des Mühlsteins, das ist das dritte.
And then you find the voice of the millstone.
Das ist die Industrie.
And there you have the industry.
Davon haben wir genug gesprochen jetzt.
We've spoken enough about this.
Und dann finden wir das vierte, das Licht einer Lampe.
And then the fourth thing is the light of the lamp.
Das meine ich, das ist die Philosophie.
And I think that is philosophy.
Das sind großartige Dinge.
These are great things.
Ich habe manchmal aus gewissen ernsten Gründen etwas darüber lesen müssen.
Sometimes due to quite serious reasons, I was forced to read something about this.
Und es ist fantastisch, wie gerade diese Philosophien unser Intellekt menschlich erfreuen können.
And this is the fact that the philosophy is just fantastic for our intellect and gives joy to the intellect.
Und ich kann nur sehr warnen davor, ein Nebengedanke jetzt.
And just by the way, I can only warn you about this.
Jedes Mal, wenn ich aus gewissen ernsten Gründen mich damit beschäftigen musste,
every time there is a serious occasion and I have to look into these things,
bin ich auf die Knie gegangen, um meinen Herrn zu bitten, dass er mich bewahrt.
Every time I had to do this, I went on my knees and asked the Lord to preserve me.
Aber ich spürte dann beim Lesen die Faszination, die sie auf den Menschen ausüben kann.
But then, in reading these things, I experienced how fascinating this material is and how it can grip us.
Dieses System hat auch Licht.
This system does have light.
Aber es ist ein falsches Licht.
But it is a wrong, false light.
Und von Gottes Augen gesehen ist das ihr Licht Finsternis.
And from God's point of view, these are lights of error and really darkness.
Und das fünfte, was wir finden, ist die Stimme des Bräutigams und der Braut.
And the fifth point mentioned here is the voice of the bridegroom and bride.
Das ist Freude.
This is joy.
Dieses System kann Freude für den Menschen vermitteln.
This system can give joy to people.
Aber es ist eine falsche Freude.
But again, it is false joy.
Und es ist eine vergehende Freude.
and it is passing joy.
Das wird sehr deutlich hier.
This becomes very clear here.
Wir haben ein sehr schönes Lied in Deutschen.
There's a very nice hymn in German.
Und ich hoffe, dass es Englisch übersetzt ist.
And I hope it has been translated into English.
Und da singen unsere Jungen, Jesus gibt Freude.
And there the young people sing, Jesus gives joy.
Freude, die nie vergeht.
Joy that does not vanish away.
Aber hier haben wir auch Freude.
But here we also have joy.
Dieses System gibt Freude.
The system gives joy.
Aber es ist eine Freude, die vergeht.
But it is joy that vanishes.
Und gerade das ist, was in diesen beiden Versen vor uns kommt.
And this is exactly what comes before us in these two verses.
Alles, was dieses System bietet, ist einerseits großartig für den Menschen.
Everything the system offers is great for man on the one hand.
Aber es ist etwas, das zu Ende geht.
But it is something that has an end.
Und noch einen Gedanken über das endgültige Gericht dieses Systems.
And one other thought about the finality of the judgment of the system.
Wir werden es später noch sehen in Kapitel 19, Vers 3.
We'll see later in chapter 19, verse 3.
Es ist schon darauf hingewiesen worden.
It has already been alluded to.
Ihr Rauch steigt auf von Ewigkeit zu Ewigkeit.
The smoke rose up forever and ever.
Das ist der Charakter dieses Gerichtes.
This is the character of this judgment.
Und wir müssen das wieder sehen im Kontrast zum Charakter der wahren Braut des Lammes.
And again, we should contrast this with the character of the true bride.
Es ist wahr, dass die Versammlung Gottes in der Zeit gebildet wird auf Erden.
It is true that the Church of God was formed in time on earth.
Aber in ihrem Charakter ist sie ewig.
But in her character, she is eternal.
Das ist der große Unterschied zum Volk Israel.
And this is the great difference with the people of Israel.
Das als Volk am Ende des tausendjährigen Reiches zu Ende gehen wird.
Which will finish at the end of the millennium.
Die gläubigen Menschen nicht. Die darin sind natürlich. Ich spreche nicht von Menschen.
I'm not speaking about men now.
Aber ich spreche vom Volk, Israel als Volk.
But I speak of the people of Israel as a people.
Es geht zu Ende am Ende des tausendjährigen Reiches.
This will end at the end of the millennium.
Aber die Versammlung wird in Ewigkeit bestehen.
But the assembly will exist forever.
Geliebte Brüder, das haben unsere Väter erkannt.
Beloved brethren, our fathers recognized it.
Und das hat sie dahin geführt, die Großartigkeit der Versammlung Gottes zu sehen.
And this prompted them to see the greatness of the assembly of God.
Und dass sie, eben weil sie in ihrem Charakter ewig ist.
Especially because of this point, because it is eternal in its character.
Und darum ist im Kontrast dazu auch dieses Gericht endgültig und für immer durch dieses System.
And this is why, as a contrast, the judgment of this system here is eternal.